Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room. And we're going to do a Dork Forest, you guys. I did this guy's podcast. I did his show. And now he's coming on to Dork Out. He's going to do the Dork Forest. And yeah. He's the show that I did of his. It's called The What's Update, and that's where the Twitter and Instagram thing is. It's at The What's Update. Those are all words that we can all spell. You can figure it out, people. I believe in all of you. And Xander, please welcome to the show, Xander Cation.
Hello, everybody.
You feel welcome?
Here.
It's happening.
Yeah. Considering I've already interviewed you, this is kind of a switch around.
Right. Let me lower the stakes. There's absolutely nothing to – there's. It's just going to be a mellow kind of gathering. And you're going to dork out about something, which I want to hear about, which is always
that's
fun.
That's why I got my nerd glasses on.
You got your nerd glasses going. I got mine. Yeah. Era 2000 PS2 games?
Yeah. My childhood in video games was based around like three specific franchises, which were Ratchet and Clank, Jack and Daxter, and Sly Cooper.
Okay.
And those are kind of
the first two. I've never even heard of Sly Cooper. But they're all kind of platformy, aren't they? Or
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the classic platformers.
Can you tell me what Sly Cooper was first?
Sly Cooper was a stealth platformer type game that came out, I think it was 2003?
Yeah?
No, 2002. And basically, you play as a thief, a raccoon, and you...
You are a rogue. Oh, you're a raccoon. Oh, that's raccoon. Adorable. Okay.
Yeah. It's like the animal mascot.
Yeah.
Like, in the first game, your goal is to steal back a book called The Thievius Raccoonus, which contains all the information of the family line of the Cooper clan. Basically, their entire family of thieves.
Okay, and all the sort of the tricks of generations of Coopers? Of raccoon Coopers?
And Sly Cooper was initially supposed to inherit the book, but his father was killed by five intruders called the Fiendish Five.
The Fiendish Five came and took the book?
Yep, and killed his father. So now, with the help of his friends Bentley and Murray, he goes out to retrieve the Thievius Raccoonus.
Now, are his friends also raccoons, or is it a variety of animals?
No, Bentley is a turtle, and Murray is a hippo.
Okay. You know what? You got to mix up your skill set.
Yeah.
The skills that a turtle have...
different than the skills of a raccoon. Am I correct?
Though in the first game, you don't actually get to play as them. But in the second and third games, you do.
Basically,
Sly is the field man of it. Like, he goes out and does the missions. Bentley is mainly the computer and smarts guy. He does all the planning. And Murray takes care of the getaway driving and also the muscle.
Okay.
Three-man band.
That's great. It's you usually don't need more than that. That's nice. I've got someone on drums. Yeah. And so because I remember that, because I know Jak and Daxter and Ratchet and Clank are these sort of, they were the first sort of 3D platforms, right?
Yes.
So what kind of worlds are you going through? Is it futuristic? Is it junkyardy?
It's actually modern. Like, if you took real life locations and then translated them into this world. So you visit places like Paris, Venice. You visit the Welsh Triangle in the first game.
You're all over Europe and the British Islands? What?
And then Mesa City in the U.S., China, like all sorts of locations.
And it's a platform. So essentially you run, you jump, you fight, and are there any more tasks besides that? He's a stealer guy.
Yeah, because it's mostly a stealth game. Like the first game, it really seemed like it was trying to work off of classic collectathon platformers, where it's like you go through the level, you get the things, you find a secret in each level, and then you move on. But the second game was when they actually hammered out some proper gameplay for it, where they made it more sandbox style.
Okay.
You'd have a particular level and setting where you could freely explore it, and then you'd occasionally get jobs that you have to do around the area. And at that point, you could play as Sly, Bentley, and Murray.
Okay. So, at the end of the first one, spoiler alert, 2002, get over it, do you face the Fiendish Five and defeat them?
Yeah, there are five worlds, and you defeat each of the Fiendish Five, picking up a new skill along the way, and then you face off against the final member of the Fiendish Five, and possibly the most sinister, Clockwork, a giant robotic owl that pretty much nearly kills you at least three times.
Oh, wow. So it's a Clockwork owl? Gerhu? Like, who? Who?
Yes.
Owl.
But, okay. Every one of the other characters is, like an anthropomorphic, they walk like humans, they do that. But Clockwork is just a straight-up owl, the solid metal with glowing yellow eyes, and it is slightly frightening.
Yeah, I bet if you were a child,
especially at that time.
Yeah, like if you're little and you're playing that thing, you're like, this is a super creepy-looking owl. Did the owl have laser eyes?
Not laser eyes, but he did fire lasers at you.
Okay, because I would have said laser eyes, leaving money on the table, not using the eyeballs as lasers. But so five different worlds. Did the worlds have different? How are the graphics? I mean,
it was really good. Like, one of the main design philosophies behind the Sly Cooper games was making it more like a comic book. Like, their main inspiration was Batman the Animated Series, where it's like those hard angles and shadows and things like that.
Oh, that's cool looking. I bet it's really cool looking.
Yeah, and it just kept getting better as they went on. But what really cinched it was the gameplay.
Yeah, and well, it ought. So the gameplay, but the gameplay was good to begin with, and then it got better in the sequels?
Yeah, they just kept refining it. Basically, like, as a like stealthy character, you had to be able to pull off all sorts of like stealthy moves and stuff, like walking on tightropes or jumping on small points or anything like that.
Oh, so, it was acrobatic?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
And,
sorry.
And so what they did for all of the games was they tied all of these moves to a simple action of jumping and pressing the circle button, which if you are near a point where you can do something, and it's usually shown with blue sparkles around where it's supposed to be, you're able to jump, hit the circle button, and it will do the move for you.
Oh, okay.
And it also even made sure to let you know that you're able to successfully pull off the move, because if you, like, jump, or do, like, a double jump, and then you hit the circle button, Sly will kind of do a pirouette in midair, and then land where he needs to land.
Okay. So
you got immediate confirmation of you pulled this off.
Yes. And could you fail? Was how did you die?
You died if, or, okay, in the first game was really different from the second and third games.
Okay.
The first game worked on a one-hit kill system, and you could pick up lucky horseshoes that if you got one of them, then you could take an extra hit. And if you got two of them, you could take two extra hits.
Okay.
And then if you took another hit after that, you're dead.
Okay, so it was one and done unless you had horseshoes on you in the first game. Yeah. And you just go to these different worlds. Were they different terrains?
Yes, and then in the first game you would go to different levels within the world, and then it'd be kind of like a hallway system. Like
just a dungeon?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, okay. So that's the first one.
Yes.
And then the second one, more story. Is that...
Yes.
Did they come back? Did the Fiendish come back on the second one?
All of the Fiendish Five were defeated, except when you defeat Clockwork, he is laying across the final area in pieces. And then you discover that somebody has picked up all the Clockwork parts and it's being held in a museum. So then your very first mission, and also your tutorial for the new style, is you have to break into this museum and then steal all the Clockwork parts. So, working your way through the museum, Bentley's deactivating the security systems, Murray's breaking things, and you get to the final room, and nothing. The parts are gone. And the police are in there, they ambush you, and then you gotta make a quick escape. But not before learning about a new threat called the Claw Gang.
Oh.
These people are trying to make use of all the Clockwork parts in their own ways. Like, one of the antagonists, Dimitri, uses the tail feathers and their unique metal to use them as printing plates for counterfeiting.
Oh.
And another one uses it for train shipping systems, using the lungs and a stomach as pumps for the engines. So all of them are mostly just trying to use the parts for their own selfish gains. Except the main one in charge has something a bit more sinister in mind. He wants to rebuild Clockwork and then merge with him.
Ah, and then sort of, he thinks he can, that sounds like a terrible plan. You know, when you think that you're like, I'm going to make this monster and then I'm going to get to control this monster, not realizing that the monster you've created has a will of its own. So
you'd think that would be how it'd end up, but...
Yeah.
By the end of it, you discover that he's trying to rebuild Clockwork, and Clockwork is essentially still dead. It's just his body.
Oh.
And a little extra thing about Clockwork is that he is essentially immortal. Like, every death in the Cooper clan, like all the previous ones that you find in pages of the Thievius Raccoonus, if they have an image associated with them, in the top corner of it, or somewhere in the image, you see the silhouette of an owl, like a giant owl. So he killed all of the previous Coopers, and that's the reason why he came after Sly and his family. He wanted to end the Cooper line once and for all and show that without the Thievius Raccoonus and all the skills of old, the Cooper clan was nothing.
But nothing. You will never be able to recoup.
So
it's interesting.
The thing that kept him alive was his hate for the Cooper.
And so, finally, Sly is the one to defeat him and to make him dead. This hasn't been a... Because what if it wasn't just parallel families? Like, new Cooper, new Clockwork? Bam!
No, it was the same Clockwork.
Same clock. Okay, weird. Immortal Clockwork. I suppose it's a machine. So when the sinister guy in number two rebuilds Clockwork... How is it not, how does he not, where is he if he is immortal, if he doesn't come back into that body?
So basically throughout the second game, you actually slightly work with one of the police officers that's after you. Her name's Constable Neela. And so you need to work with her on certain occasions, and then eventually she betrays you and she's considered an enemy. And it's assumed at that point it's just she was in it for just getting ahead at Interpol, the industry that's chasing after.
Right, she just wanted a promotion of some sort.
Because
okay.
The other cop that's mainly after you is Inspector Carmelita Fox. And she is, like, She's constantly after the Cooper gang and is also a slight love interest of Sly. Constantly flirty banter back and forth.
Interesting. Do you know, this is completely separate, if foxes and raccoons are in the same genus?
I don't know, and knowing how the internet goes with these things, I'm not sure I want to.
Right. Too much information will happen if I even go there. So yep. We won't. Let us not. So that's the second. So what? Yeah, so to do that,
So once you get to the end, you find out that Neela has been working with the supposed big bad Arpeggio the entire time. Arpeggio is like a small bird, like a parrot type thing. And at first, when you get his backstory, it seems that he's just a weak, pathetic bird, and he can't fly. So it seems like he's using clockwork just to achieve his dreams.
Uh-huh.
And like Sly even confronts him on this, and he's just like, all this work because you can't fly. You're pathetic. Mm. And then he reveals that it's not that. It's for immortality. He wants to merge with clockwork to become immortal.
Oh, I see. I see.
So then he's about to do it. Then Neela attacks him, knocks him down, and then merges with clockwork herself. And then he's on the ground like, but you can't do this. You're my protege. Get out of the clockwork frame or I'll. And then with the giant owl head, just, and he's dead. Like, super dead. Like, the big antagonist of this game is now dead.
Tiny
and
bird,
now you gotta deal
gone.
With this.
And so, and Leela has gone bad cop. Neela with an N?
Yes.
Okay, she's gone total bad cop here. And has
she
merged
wanted this all along.
The big bad, she has merged with the clockwork, and now you have to fight the clockwork again. Same same boss, different operator, different moves?
Once you get to the final parts of that stage, it's actually kind of familiar to how you fought her fought clockwork in the first game.
Okay.
Where Carmelita comes in on a helicopter, you take on a turret, and you have to fight Clockwork. And at that point, it's referred to as Clockla, like a combination of the names, but I always found that kind of stupid.
Okay.
So you have to fight Clockwork, and uses most of the same moves, but then eventually, because you're on Arpeggio's airship, and eventually she just breaks the entire thing, snatches up the safe house where Bentley and Murray are held in, and now you gotta save your pals. So now you gotta get out there and confront him yourself.
That's it.
Oh. And then it's still Neela's voice as you're talking to Clockwork, but then eventually it goes from simply her own voice, where it's like, this is what I planned this whole time, to, I hate you. I hate you so much, Cooper! And like, I don't.
Wow, that's nuts. And also super creepy for what is ostensibly a super cute platform game.
Yeah, it gets kind of messed up.
Were these ones? Andy said that they weren't made in-house. They weren't made in Sony PlayStation, that they were separate game developer companies in.
Yeah, Sly Cooper was developed by Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch, okay.
They went on to make the Infamous series, and now they're making, now they've made Ghost of Tsushima.
Okay. Are they out of Japan?
I think they're in America.
Okay. Because what I have found is that the Japanese games themselves will go super dark and weird. Like, one of my favorite, I think it was a PS2 game that Andy introduced me to that he got in like a just like a bin where it was a buck and a half, was called Stretch Panic. And it was a PS2 game where it was about a little girl whose twin sister is stolen by demon ladies. And so she has to go into the demon world and fight these demon ladies. And it's all rainy. And so she goes, she's in this main room. She goes into the fight, the demon ladies. The demon ladies are on these spinning platforms. And they are, all you see are their eyes and their boobs. And they have ponytails. And the only way to kill them is to affect their damage is to run around and pull their ponytails. And you run around, pull ponytail, brings down the damage, right? Run around, pull the ponytail. If you knock them off the platform, their boobs flatten out, turn into helicopter, and they fly back up and come back on the platform. Weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
What the hell?
Yes, it was super, but it was a pretty cool game, quite honestly. There was it was, because you had to, you know, it was a lot of dodging and kind of, you know, figuring out how to get back there and pull a ponytail and get in front and dodge, because they would hit you back, obviously. And then you'd have to run around and pull a ponytail. And there was always like three of them per platform. And then you had to get, and I never did finish the game. I never did. That's been my biggest problem with PlayStation games, is I never play them all the way through. Do you usually play them all the way through?
With a lot of the PlayStation 2 games I had as a kid, or even to the PlayStation 3 games that I later got, I couldn't finish them while I was younger, but closer to nowadays, I go back and I'm able to finish a lot of them, no problem.
That makes sense. I mean, I know that my nieces and nephews were always finishing every game, and I was like, that's because you don't have jobs. It's like, you could sit for 4 hours, 6 hours after school, as long as you get your homework done. My brothers would be like, yeah, go ahead, play. And you're like, all right. And so is it different worlds for the second one of this Sly Cooper?
You go to different locations and you complete jobs around the location. So you go like Paris to India to Prague. Like, you go all over the place. Like ending up on this airship thing that you have to stop.
Oh, like a dirigible? Kind of like a steampunky?
Yeah, but like a city size. Well, not like city size, like a county size?
More of a large town. But it doesn't matter, because when they would go to these different cities, were there like recognizable landmarks?
If you go to Paris, you'll see the Eiffel Tower. If you when you go to Venice in the third game, that you see Rialto
Canals and the Rialto Bridge. And okay, well, that's kind of cool just by itself. It sounds like a really good looking game. And so then at the end of it, is the final battle on the dirigible on the city?
No, once you're able to take out Clockla for once and for all, then you crash down into Paris. All three of you survive, and Carmelita is like trying to catch up in the helicopter. and then you look at the wreckage of Clockwork, and looks pretty dead. And then it's like, we did it. And then she comes back online. It's like, die, insect, die!
Ooh, insect
like,
talk.
Okay. All like, right. Okay, we need to finish this off once and for all. And then Bentley is able to figure out the source of the immortality. It's kind of like a hate ship black magic device thing.
Okay.
So then Murray has to go over to Clockwork's now constructed head, pry it open. Bentley blows up some other parts of the head, is able to get at the hate ship. And he's like standing in the mouth and is like, guys, I got it. We need to get out of here. And the head comes down. And all you hear is, ah! My glasses! Murray grabs the head, lifts it back up, grabs Bentley, and they need to get out of there. And so then finally, it starts to like self-destruct. Then you go
The clockwork.
Clockwork starts to destruct.
Okay.
And you go into the final cutscene, and it's not breaking. Like, all the parts still seem pristine.
Yeah.
All because of the hate chip. And Carmelita finally comes in and, like, pissed that she didn't get to take some shots at Neela herself. Takes it out on the hate chip. Drops it. Stomps the hate chip. And all the parts begin to age all at once and decay.
Oh. See, Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and then Sly comments on the irony of the fact that Carmelita, a police officer, destroyed the curse upon an entire thieving clan.
Oh, that is ironic.
Like,
what
like
I thought
story
was,
gets crazy deep.
Yeah. I thought for some reason when the head fell on Bentley, I thought the hate chip would have been implanted into Bentley, and then Sly Cooper 3 was he had to get it out of Bentley. But that is me just writing stuff. That would have been interesting, but that was not Sly Cooper 3. What was Sly Cooper 3?
So Sly Cooper 3, after the death of Clockwork, you learn a few things. One, Bentley is now paralyzed from the
from the thing landing on him.
So his legs are now unusable.
Okay.
And Murray, out of grief for not being able to save Bentley, quits the team. So he leaves. And then Sly, throughout all this process, has learned about a secret of the Cooper clan, a place called the Cooper Vault, where every one of the family stashed all of their riches. So he's like, well, it's time to collect my inheritance if we got nothing left.
Yeah.
And so he and Bentley go there, and a mysterious figure by the name of Dr. M has set up shop there. It looks like he's been trying to crack into the vault for years and set up a fortress around it like Fort Knox.
Oh.
So now...
He's defended the vault so that he has time to break into the vault?
Yep.
Okay.
And so then now the goal of this game isn't to go out and defeat the fiend. Go out and defeat people or go and collect things. Now, you have to find people that can assist you in getting into the vault.
Oh.
So.
How do you do that? Yeah.
Well, first things first, you gotta get Murray back. So, in the first... I'd seen a commentary on the series where, for the first episode of Sly 3, it really feels like a couple of things are missing. Like a team member... The team van, because it had floated away on a block of ice as the airship took off its light, too. Mm-hmm. So it's like a team member, a team van, Bentley's legs. So you're missing a few things.
Bentley's legs. Okay. So
as soon as I saw that.
They have to go find all of those?
Not Bentley's legs.
Not the legs. What just happened?
First things first, you got to find Murray. And this is where you end up in Venice, because you heard that, or you get information that Murray is now training in Aboriginal sacred arts and has been sent on a walkabout, ending up in Venice. So now you gotta find him and to get him back on the team.
He's taken Aboriginal artifacts from Australia and ended up in Venice with them?
No, he took Aboriginal, lessons in Aboriginal culture from a guru that appears in the second level, you can recruit.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. But he's in Venice.
Yes, he's in Venice, and the situation is a mob boss is polluting the canals of Venice with tar, and Murray is not able to leave until, quote, the black water runs pure. So
you gotta clear
up that problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then eventually you're able to do that, and Murray's back on the team. But then, the team is intrigued by this guru that Murray keeps mentioning, and Murray feels bad about breaking off his training. So, you go to the Australian outback and meet the guy.
Okay.
And there's a whole thing with a bunch of miners there that are digging into the sacred sites, and you need to clear them out, and there's this whole thing with a dark magic mask. It was kind of one of the more...
The whole thing sounds very strange, but that's interesting. Yeah. I've been to Australia and I met those miners, and I'm sure that the largest hole in the world is in the western coast. It's in it's adjacent to a town called Kalgoorlie, Kalgoorlie, in Australia, and it is it's a gold super pit, and it's a gold mine. But all they do is just remove. They're just digging to the center of the earth, and they pull gold, so much gold out of it every day that it's ridiculous. But I'm sure it was sacred to someone. But now it's just a mile crevice into the planet. So that's kind of wild. And then so they go talk to the guru and they resolve his problems.
Yes.
Does he then join the team?
He joins the team.
Yes.
And the Cooper gang is never the same again. So then you go on to recruit more people to the team. Like you travel to Holland to compete in a biplane tournament where you get a mechanic, or you recruit a mechanic named Penelope.
Who, okay.
Bentley kind of gets to have a thing for her.
Okay.
And then after that, you travel to China because you need a demolitions expert. And the only Bentley, usually the resident demolitions expert, doesn't think his explosives are going to cut it. So the only other option
is to go to the source of fireworks, China.
Is to go to one of the Fiendish Five.
Oh, no. Oh, they go back to the one of the Fiendish Five?
Yeah, the level that takes place in China in the first game, the antagonist is the Panda King.
Yeah.
And he basically, like, his whole thing in that game was not only did he kill Sly's father and take Phoebe's Raccoonus, but also he extorted local Chinese cities, and if they didn't pay up, then he would launch fireworks onto the mountains near their town and destroy them in an avalanche.
Wow.
So this guy was bad.
Yeah, that's a bad guy. But,
and,
Sly, but we need him on the team.
Yeah,
that's what I hear.
Sly is rightfully pissed about this option, but goes along with it anyway, because Bentley is insistent.
Right.
So you go there, and it's one of the more interesting levels in the game, because you find the Panda King, you get up to him, but he's in sort of a trance, like a deep meditative state. So then the guru has to bridge the minds of the Panda King and Sly. It's so you go into the level inside the mind, and it is an exact recreation of the original fight from the first game. Except now, Sly is as he is now, but Panda King is still trapped in the past.
Oh.
So you should be able to make short work. So you need to be able to talk to him. You can't just defeat him, because this is what he's been going through his entire life up until now.
Okay.
Now, you need to learn to be able to slightly forgive him and talk him out of the trance.
Oh. Well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And the entire level is devoted to getting back Panda King's daughter, who was kidnapped and forced to be married to a local warlord known as General Cao. And yes, he is a chicken.
That is ridiculous.
It's kind of silly, but you kind of get over the silliness once you get a few encounters with this guy.
Well, yeah, because you're just like, no, I get the joke. In other news, he's about to kick my ass. So I'm just going to fight this chicken.
He's kidnapped this guy's daughter and is forcing her to marry him.
Okay.
And then eventually you're able to fight him. And not only is he a terrible person, a warlord, and kidnapped a daughter, he's also sexist as hell.
Uh-oh.
Like one of the lines at the beginning of the battle is like, "Jing King," or the Panda King's daughter is named Jing King, and Sly's like, "Jing King is a person, not property." Mm-hmm. Oh, who cares? When our bloodlines cross, it will be glorious. But she doesn't want to marry you.
Yeah.
And this is the line he says. She's a woman. She doesn't know up from down. You're like, oh, I am going to kick your ass.
Good to hear it.
You just upgraded from awful person to absolutely terrible person.
Just a freaking monster.
Okay, well, let's do this.
Let's go. And what are their weapons? What is Sly's weapon of choice?
Sly wields a cane. It's kind of a basic cane, but then it goes up. Then hooks around. So it's quite often used to like pull things or latch onto hooks. Or climb. Or
beat them. Yes.
Yes. And then also in the later games you can use it to pickpocket people, where you reach into their pocket with the cane and then pop out some coins.
Oh, okay. Yeah, is there currency? Is there stuff to buy?
Yes. You can collect coins. And in the first game, all they did was you collect 100 coins and get an extra life. It was
kind of a thing.
But in the second and third games, you could use coins to buy power-ups on a thing called ThiefNet, where it's like kind of like a dark web. You could sell items that you stole in order to buy new abilities.
Okay. That's kind of hilarious, because the ThiefNet is your fencer, and you have to fence your goods, and all right, I get it. So then, so they finally go ahead.
And in the second game, or in the second and third games, you can both pickpocket coins out of people's pockets, or sometimes, if there's like a glow in the pocket, you can pickpocket until you get a piece of loot. So it'd be like a necklace or a watch, and they each have different values.
Oh, okay. So like an actual thing.
Yes. And then in the second game, you would go back to the safe house, get onto ThiefNet, and then sell them. So then you could buy items. Now, what I didn't like about the third game is that they kind of cut out the middleman there, where as soon as you stole the item, then you would get the coins. It's like, come on. Oh. Felt more realistic the other way.
It's kind of fun to go, because ThiefNet is funny.
And, made you feel like a thief.
Yes. And then what could you buy? You just power-ups to the existing powers that you have, right? That's what you were buying?
Yeah, you could buy things like a knockout dive, where if a guard is in front of you that's too tough to beat, you could use this power on them, knock them out, and then you could do your stealth attack on them to immediately kill them.
Okay.
Or you could buy a paraglider, which allows Sly to glide.
Okay.
Or you could buy things for Bentley and Murray, because in both of the games, Bentley serves as kind of a hit-and-bomb type character.
Okay.
Where you could use a sleep dart launcher in order to shoot sleep darts at guards, and then pop out bombs in order to kill them.
Okay.
So his power-ups would usually be things like you can toss a bomb that causes all enemies in the area to go to sleep, or toss a bomb that causes them all to fight each other.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And, that's funny.
Murray mostly relied on his strength, where like you have small guards and big guards. With small guards, if Murray, like, basic attack, wham, they are knocked out in one punch. And then, if an enemy is knocked out, or you have an object in front of you, then you can use a stomp move to pick it up and then throw it at things.
Okay.
Mostly throwing guards at other guards.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes more sense than I can imagine. So you do the mind meld, you go in, you convince one of the Fiendish Five that you're over it and he should be over it, and now he's part of the team too?
No, neither Sly nor the Panda King get over it just yet, because not only is Panda King a horrible extortionist, but also remember, he still kills Sly's dad.
Right.
And Sly pretty much ruined the Panda King's reputation, and that disgrace was what eventually allowed Jing King to be captured. So they're still not cool with each other by, like, up until right at the end of the level. Like, once you rescue Jing King, and after a series of events, you rob General Cao blind, because he's got it coming.
Right. That's the game. You're a thief. And,
yeah.
And so... So, yeah, you don't want General Cao, you want, but you do want the Fiendish Five guy, Jing King's, or does Jing King come with you?
Jing King, or once you rescue Jing King, the Panda King drops her off at a family member's house in order to keep her safe, and then the Panda King comes with you in order to help you.
Okay, well... It'd be nice if she got some work out of this, but nope. All right, so now you got the Panda King, you have the Guru, you have the team. You have five members of the team.
Yeah, you now have Sly, Bentley, Murray, the Guru, Penelope, and the Panda King.
Okay, who is Penelope again?
The mechanic that I met.
Oh, the mechanic, that's right.
Yes, that Bentley has a thing for.
Yeah.
So then the final level is a little bit ridiculous and kind of breaks the pace. Basically, you go to a pirate town, steal a pirate boat, and have to retrieve some diving gear, then save Penelope, and there's a whole thing, but eventually you get one of the antagonists from the previous, or from Sly 2, on your team as a diver. So, like, deep sea stuff.
Oh, you needed a diver. Okay.
Yes.
You gotta go get that person and do whatever that is. Makes sense.
Yeah. So
and
now
then
you've
got a fortress, right?
Yep. And I didn't mention this before, but the game doesn't open with you trying to find Murray. It opens with your assault on the Cooper Vault.
Yeah.
Like, it opens with Sly at the front of the fortress and then talking to Bentley. And it's like, this is it. The gang's all here and it's ready to get you into that vault. We're working 5x5 here. Make sure everybody's in sync. And then it goes through all the characters, but their faces are silhouetted.
Okay.
So you don't know who they are at that point. I mean... For some of them, you can probably guess.
Right. But they kind of bookend the story?
Yes. So
okay.
Then at at the end of the beginning part where you're breaking in, things go wrong, and you're not able to get into the vault, so you gotta make a quick getaway and regroup. You're about to get back to the boat, which you now know is the pirate boat from later, mm-hmm. but before you can get there, there's a reason why the guy is called Dr. M, in reference to Dr. Moreau, like, as in the island of Dr. Moreau. And
yeah.
And blocking your path is a giant science creature thing that grabs Bentley, and you gotta fight him.
Okay. So then
it is being controlled by Dr. M. You try and get some hits in, then it doesn't work. And then he's about to chomp down on Bentley, and so in an act of desperation, Sly throws his cane, lodges it in the monster's mouth. That causes him to release Bentley.
Okay.
Then it spits the cane out. You don't have a weapon anymore, and it grabs you. And then it ends off with Sly struggling to get out of the monster's claws, and Bentley screaming to help him.
Okay.
And so then, once you finished all of the levels, then you're back to the end.
Right, and you're in the hand of the bad guy.
Yep.
The big bad.
Yeah, and all the story thus far has been told kind of like a flashback for Sly.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you're at the end, and then just like, all of this time, all this effort put together, now I'm going to die here. And then he thinks, even though we've been through all this, I just can't help but think of what a coward I've been around Carmelita. Like, I know we're on opposite sides of the law, but if I did something, we could find a way to make it work. That'll never happen now. I can't take this crushing. Just make the pain stop. And then cut to the title card, and then rolling in on an Interpol boat, Carmelita, and a bunch of mercenaries coming to take on the creature.
There we go. The
girl
cavalry
is coming to the rescue.
That's it. She's going to save the dragon.
Yeah.
That's great. Good for her.
Yeah. So she comes in and is able to take down the beast, but mm-hmm. Sly is still pretty messed up. So
right.
You don't get to play as him for a little while. Then you have to go and retrieve the cane, but then eventually Dr. M's able to get his hands on it, and you have to fight him in some sort of giant flying creature in a biplane battle. And
oh,
then
wow.
You get the cane back, and then it's time to head into the vault.
Yeah.
And then in this, you basically get the entire Cooper line, or all the different characters you've seen thus far and the moves that you've learned.
Yeah.
So you see the one
from the thieves' book.
Yeah, the Thievius Raccoonus.
Okay.
So you see the one that invented the rail slide. You see the one that invented the spire jump. And you see all these people and get little factoids about them from Sly as you look at them, mm-hmm. as you essentially have to go through a gauntlet of different areas that are based off of each of the ancestors' moves.
Right.
And then at the end, you finally reach the inner sanctum. And then you have to go back to Bentley and Murray waiting inside the vault at the entrance. And then they have to defend against all the guards and minions that have forced the door after you and are trying to get into the Cooper vault. So Murray's able to beat the shit out of a lot of them, and then you finally get some backstory on who exactly Dr. M is. See, he was essentially the Bentley to Sly's father.
Oh.
He was the brains of his dad's operation.
Aha. The guy in the chair. So he's essentially operations guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically now he's trying to get under Bentley's skin. It's like, come on. You know he treats you as a second fiddle. You'll never be nothing more. You'll never be anything more with him in charge.
Right. We were the ones who got all these trinkets. And is that what he thinks? Is that.
Yep. But then Bentley's like, no, he's my friend. I've known him since forever.
Yeah.
We're friends. We're equals. Mm-hmm. And he realizes this. And Murray is just already defending Sly. Like, he's the one that has to keep Dr. M down as Bentley has to do some things with security devices in the cave in order to take Dr. M down.
Right.
But eventually, he gets away and then goes into the gauntlet and is able to follow after Sly. So then,
Okay. Cut
back to Sly at the Inner Sanctum. And he's just overwhelmed. Like, all of this Cooper history laid out in front of him. Mm-hmm. Then Dr. M pops in for a final battle. And honestly, this one is probably the hardest in the series because, well, it's not like the previous final battles where I was like, oh, you gotta shoot the thing or shoot the thing again.
Yeah.
This time, you actually have to fight him face to face. And it is not easy.
Okay. So is it more jumping and acrobatics?
A little bit of jumping, acrobatics, lots of combat, a lot of the moves you've learned thus far, a lot of the extra power-ups you have, it all comes here.
Okay.
So, once you're able to defeat him, Dr. M's just like, can't believe you, you bunch of selfish, dirty, conniving thieves! All of you thieves! And then Sly just lays some truth down. Just like, I'm not my father. Mm-hmm. And I'm not this guy, or this one who came before, or any of the people who came before me. I'm just me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened between you and my father, but it's not the same with me and Bentley.
Right.
And then, just as Dr. M's about to get up for a second bout, then Carmelita pops in through one of the doors. And then, you know, obviously, flirty banter, where it's like, nice to see you, gorgeous. You too.
Ah, shucks.
And then Dr. M's just like, aw, a love interest. Might not be able to defeat you, but at least I can hurt you through her. Fires off a shot at her, and Sly's like, not her! Runs in, takes the hit, and is freaking launched. So then the final little bit of health on Dr. M's health bar, you use Carmelita just... It's a shock. It's not an actual gun, it's a shock pistol, so...
Right.
You take
so
it down.
Carmelita takes him down?
Yes.
And then... Yeah.
And goes up to get Sly. And then Sly is just like, what happened? What is this place? Sly, are you okay? You know what? Who are you? I'm Inspector Carmelita Fox. And who am I?
No! Amnesia!
Yes. So then she's able to get him out of there. And then you get the final ending where... Sly doesn't show up for a long time. Like, everything that's left on the island, like, the vault seems to be closed off forever as all of the island collapses. But then eventually, Bentley and Murray find something off to the side, where it's Sly's cane, his pouch, and one last cave entrance with the gold behind it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so he left his cane behind.
Right.
Like, hey, wait a minute. He had amnesia. So then, as the time goes by, they just figure Sly didn't want to be found. So
right.
Murray goes back to the Outback to complete his training. Bentley and Penelope are together at this point, and they're like, doing all sorts of science stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, you get one last thing after the credits, where you see Sly and Carmelita holding hands at what looks to be like a fancy ball or something. On a balcony, and you're looking through Bentley's binoculars, kind of like a binoculars that you can use to zoom out on things. He looks in, and then you just see them holding hands romantically, and then after that, just...
Oh, a wink.
Like, he didn't have amnesia. he didn't forget anything at all. He just was done.
He was just done, and he wanted to change his life so that they could be together. Because that was the plot twist. I have to say this, Xander, is that you have explained the plot of three video games that is probably better than how those three video games explained that plot. Because sometimes I have a...
Actually, I did horribly at this. There is so much that I missed.
Well, that's cool. I would love to see that game, actually, or possibly even play it. Is it available for PS3 or PS4?
There is a Sly HD collection on PS3, and I don't know if it was ported to PS4.
Fair enough, probably
not. All I can tell you is there is a fourth game. It was not made by the same studio, and I consider it non-canon because it
fair
sucked.
Enough. It's not good.
It basically just undid all the emotional
the good work.
All the satisfaction you got from the ending of Sly 3, where it's like, okay, Sly's happy, Carmelita's happy, Bentley's happy, Murray's happy. Everybody just ended up right where they needed to be. And the game just sort of tosses out all of it.
Because they, and I wonder who hired him to do that, to ruin it all.
Oh,
just because they were, yeah?
They basically sucker punch passed the Sly Cooper IP off to a company called Sanzaru.
Okay.
They had done a lot of like PSP games and also like PS2 games in the past.
Yeah.
And so they passed it off to Sanzaru first for the HD collection, so that they could remaster it. And it was a re-release, but it was done kind of shoddily. There's a couple of missing textures, dialogue things. Like, nothing compared to the Jak and Daxter collection, which was basically a one-to-one recreation in HD.
Okay. Well, that's good. And then, because with all... Do Jak and Daxter and Ratchet and... You'll be sad to hear this, Xander. By the way, I am talking with Xander Quation, and Xander Quation has a show called The What's Update. And at the What's Update is Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. And people can watch it. You can follow him and get to know what's up and the update on that. And but
pun.
We literally have 10 minutes left. So you just spent.
Dang it.
Yeah. You just spent 37 minutes explaining a game that I've never heard of or played. So I'm really excited about Sly Cooper. So, but what the thing is do Jak and Daxter and Ratchet and Clank, which are also these 3D platform games, have that kind of emotional engagement as well?
Oh yeah. Basically, the first three games of each of these series is golden. Like they tell amazing stories and have a consistent theme. Like with Sly Cooper, the whole thing is about legacy.
Like, the and Cooper family and with friendship.
With Ratchet and Clank, most of the early games were criticizing consumerism, or like everybody in the galaxies that you travel through are only out for money.
Okay,
like the world could be ending around them, and they could have some life-saving gadget that you really need in order to progress, but they gotta get paid first. So
right, and Jak and Daxter.
Jak and Daxter, I'd say it's mostly about adaptation. Because once you go from the first to the second game in that series, it's a radical change. So I think it's somewhat about adaptation.
Oh, like sort of growing and learning and becoming different people, or?
Yeah, because that game basically just went from open world collectathon to my first Grand Theft Auto.
Okay.
it was a radical change, and it'd probably take an entire another episode. So, if you want to have you back, then I'll explain one.
Yeah. It'll be a sec, but this is great. I just recorded an episode with a guy who his dorkdom was the Revolutionary War, and the first episode I did with him was 2 years ago, and we just got to Lexington and Concord. So I just recorded one with him yesterday, and we. To have not yet gotten to the Declaration of Independence. So I was like, dude, are you kidding me? He's like, okay, let's say we're at the Declaration of Independence then, but we haven't gotten to the Battle of New York or anything. So be it. But we will definitely have you back because that's ridiculous. It's because are there any new sort of 3D platforms? Is there anything you're playing now that are comparable that you're enjoying to some extent? That are kind of like that?
Well, most of the 3D platformers that I play these days is either the HD collections because I'm feeling nostalgic, or like some of the later games that the company's made, like Ratchet and Clank, or Insomniac Games kept going with the Ratchet and Clank series, and there's kind of a lot of diminishing returns on that one. But Naughty Dog, who made Jak and Daxter, eventually went on to instead drop that and do Uncharted, and then eventually Last of Us. And Sucker Punch moved on to the Infamous series. So Infamous, and then eventually Ghost of Tsushima. So Infamous and Uncharted were kind of the closest things that I could get to that nowadays. But other than that, it's mostly just playing some Nintendo titles because they're mostly the ones that can produce the good platformers.
Okay, because I know that I also did yesterday. This is the fifth episode I've taped in 2 days. So, but yesterday I think it was the first one was about Animal Crossing, and that's a Switch game. Yeah. And I don't have that system. Do you have that system?
I do, but from what I've heard about Animal Crossing, it is not my thing because it's mostly just about waiting.
Right. It's
it's a mobile game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like a dollhouse kind of thing where you can create a world and then you can do, and you can collect things. And it's like a social, it's like the social media of video games. So,
yeah, except the Nintendo Online Service can barely handle that as people go into your town.
Like, shoot. I did not know that. Cause we have a PS4 and, we just got rid of the other systems, because Andy hasn't made platform games. He's been mostly making mobile games and iPad games before that and Facebook games before that.
But you had a PS2 and PS3 and you just got rid of them?
Yes. Yes.
No! Those consoles had the best games.
I know. I was like, they're gathering dust. We're not doing anything with them. So I got him a PS4 and he's like, okay. And we got rid of an Xbox and a Wii and the PS3. The PS2 he had gotten rid of, actually it broke. The PS2 had broke.
Yeah, I eventually went through about, at this point I only have my third PS2. I have the PS2 Slims, but the first two just broke.
Oh yeah. But yeah. Luckily, sometimes
we were a little bit more flush with cash at the point where we could get those. But nowadays, if that broke, there'd be no way I could get another one back.
Right. See if you could find an incredibly cheap version of Stretch Panic. If you pay less than $5 for it, it's hilarious. There's absolutely no reason not to get it for $5 and look at it and see how freaking weird it is. Because it is a very Japanese kind of like, what are you? Oh, you think it's funny? You're like, you're right. You're not wrong. This is weird and funny. And it was pretty weird and funny. So you might like it a lot. But yeah. And but you don't play any of the sort of MMO or over the web.
I have been playing some more online games recently. Like after I kind of got burnt out a lot of the PlayStation games as they kind of lost quality over a while.
Yeah, there was a dip, wasn't there?
Yeah, and so I eventually got into, this is around middle school, I got into Overwatch, because I could play with my friends, and it seemed pretty stylish.
Yeah.
And then that community kind of got toxic real quick, and the developers were a bit...
We had to shut it down, right? Didn't they?
Did they?
No, they didn't. I seriously
haven't heard about Overwatch.
But, okay.
So, since then, after that point, I was like, well, I kind of still want the same experience, but I don't know, I just want something a bit more stable or with a more thriving community. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out, Overwatch is basically just a copy of Team Fortress 2, so I went back to that, and it is perfect to this day. Like
Team Fortress 2?
Yeah, Valve doesn't update it anymore, aside from some cosmetics, but the community is strong, and it's just ridiculous, and I love it. Like, it's the main online first-person shooter that I play.
Okay. Yeah. The only I got hired to play Apex Legends.
Oh yeah, I tried that as well.
It sounded like a 7-year-old girl going, "Where are you going?" Because I was running in the wrong direction, but I was like, "I don't know how to play," and so it took a second, and then I got bad at it, but I could do the things that I was to do. You know, I wasn't ever good at it, but and then I ended up I did the show that I had to play the game for, and then I stopped playing it, but I did because the company had sent me a laptop, a gaming laptop, and I was like, "Can I keep this?" And they said, no, you can't. Can we send that back to us? It's a $6,000 setup. And I was like, all right. And so I sent it back, but I don't know if all the comics sent it back. There were two other comedians, and I think there was some talk of them keeping it. And I was like, well, how do you keep it? And they go, well, you just don't respond. And I was like, that's very Sly Cooper of you. That's stealing, you big creep.
The secret ingredient is crime.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for doing the show, Xander. This was super fun.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
This is seriously plug and play, man. For 40 minutes, you just talking about...
You got me going on a topic I really like.
That was awesome. So everyone should know that I'm talking to Xander Quation, and he has a show called The What's Update, and it's at The What's Update. And this has been a delight. Thank you. thank you so much for being on the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?